Hello and welcome to episode number 42 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I'm Robert Rosenthal.
He's back.
I'm back in town, in person. I think I got a little tan, right? There's a little tan there. Yeah.
Cue the music from Hamilton. So what did I miss? Great to see you. Glad you're back.
It is good to be back, although the remote resin isn't right here. Does that mean I no longer get to light the eye?
I mean, I have the remote over here, and I mean, you can have it back. It's not a big deal or anything. It's just easy if I turned it on right now.
Yeah, I'm internally having one of those little like meltdown moments, like little child, like my toy, my brother is playing with my toy kind of thing.
And I listen, I understand that. Mm-hmm. I understand that you brought the eye to this whole show.
Mm-hmm.
It's something you care about deeply, and I don't want to keep that from you, you know. When you're gone, I turned it on and off, and I think for the most part that went well, you know. And I'm not here to replace you though or anything.
Yes.
I mean, it's just if you want it, you can have it. It's over here on my side of the table is all I'm saying, and maybe it's just as easy if I turn it on.
If there wasn't video, I would be like I'm worried that people know I'm just like staring at the remote. Like, can I have? How about now? Can I have it now? Yes.
First, you have to tell people we're going to talk about. I usually do that.
Okay.
Since you're going to turn on the light, then you got to tell people we're going to talk about.
Here's what we're going to talk about. First, we're going to talk about the fact that for some reason, just before we press record, you were quoting the Melissa Manchester song "Through the Eyes of Love," written by Marvin Hamlisch. I know this off the top of my head, for the movie Ice Castles in 1978. And I know it on the piano, so I just have the piano intro like playing in my head right now. And then I made the little joke looking through the eye of love. And so I think we should maybe change our intro music to Marvin Hamlisch.
Yeah, that fits. Fits real well.
Raise your hand in this room if you've seen Marvin Hamlisch live in concert. That's right. You know what? My parents.
A true Renaissance man.
My parents hooked me up with all of that stuff when I was a kid. It was symphonies, and that was at Powell Hall in St. Louis, going to see Marvin Hamlisch perform his hits with the symphony backing him. So,
the man was a genius.
Yes, he was. He was. And I realize we're now 3 or 4 minutes into the podcast. I'm talking about Marvin Hamlisch. I don't know what we're going to talk about today.
He's maybe a singular sensation, though.
We're going to talk about the five to play five. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the NFL draft. We're going to talk about
the NBA draft.
The NBA draft.
So lots of good stuff.
Yes. We're talking about Io.
Io.
Mm-hmm. All right. And you're going to hand me through that before I have a little personal meltdown.
Okay. Yeah, you remember where the power button is?
I do.
Okay, that's where the power, and there's the color wheel there.
I won't touch the color wheel. I will simply press the button. It is time.
Adjust the color.
Yes, it is time.
Orange.
To light the eye.
You remember how to do this? We can only fight the fight with us so long, baby. All right, as you mentioned, a lot to get into from the weekend. It was also Illinois baseball, by the way, had another big series against a ranked opponent. Got a great win. Would have loved to have seen that be a series win for Illinois baseball.
Yep.
But had one of their best wins of the year on a Friday night. Feel good. Feel good moment for the team, for the community. Packed house, fireworks, barbecue, beat a top 20 team. The whole nine yards. It was a good thing.
Just couldn't find a way to win the Sunday rubber match.
No, it was a close game.
Yep,
turned into a pitcher's duel of sorts. And Nebraska was a little bit better. One Illinois' biggest threat. Boop, double play, ending double play. That's just how that goes.
Yep. So. I mean, it's the same as the Oregon. You had the chance in the one game to maybe take the series. It was Sunday then too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but unlike, I think Illinois played much better on this Sunday game.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a 3-0 loss. It, you know, stinks to get shut out, but
yep.
just could not. Or Nebraska's good. He might even, I'd say Oregon can overpower you with their offense. Nebraska just is like death by a thousand cuts.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so hard against that team to get strike three and out number three without them doing something first.
What are they? Those two teams are 2-3 in the Big Ten. Is that right?
You mean in standings?
Yes.
I got to pull it up. But
yeah.
Nebraska is definitely second. I think Oregon may have fallen to fourth.
Okay.
Or they swept Penn State over the weekend. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's USC, Purdue, and Oregon are all kind of in that mix right after Nebraska and then Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So Illinois is now in a tie for ninth place at the moment, and top 12 teams go. But the separation between 9 and 15 right now is very tight. So
yeah.
you just got to go win games.
Yep.
You just got to go win games.
What are the series remaining? Iowa's up next.
Iowa's this weekend. And then back home for the final Big Ten series against Northwestern. They don't have a good record, but you know how that goes.
Yep.
They always kind of get up for a Illinois series. And then you go to Indiana, and Indiana's having an unusually down year.
Okay.
So on paper, Illinois is – they've just gone through two tough series.
Yeah.
So – I like their chances, and this is going to be weird to say, after 12 home games, it'll be 13 tomorrow night, I think it's good to get back on the road.
Hmm. Okay.
That's what I feel.
Yeah.
That's what I feel.
What do you think it would take? So there's 9 Big Ten games left. Is like 5-4 locks up the Big Ten tournament, something like that? Maybe you can go 4-5
I'd like 6-3. I'd like to win these last three series.
Got it. Got it. 6-3 is the goal.
Let's not dink around.
Got it. I'll hold you to it.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right. So should I ask you about the thing hanging around your neck?
What thing?
I think you got to raise it up to have it on the screen there.
Oh, this.
Yes.
I forgot it was.
Is that a locket?
What is it? It's just.
Is it a locket?
It's just a.
Does it have a photo inside? Like my mom has a locket she wears every day.
It's just a little thing we got for finishing a half marathon over the weekend.
Ella, did you bring yours? I'm going to bring Ella in.
Yeah, Ella Ella Peterson is here.
You did bring yours. You guys planned this, didn't you?
Maybe. There's a chance.
Doesn't everybody wear their medals after they finish something? Look at this. This is pretty cool. It opens up. It is kind of a lockety thing.
See, it is a locket.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ella and I saw each other for a moment in the sea of humanity getting ready for the race near the start line. And then, Ella, congrats. Your pace was obviously much faster than mine. So,
wait, I wasn't. She didn't practice. You practiced? You didn't beat her?
She practiced some.
Okay.
Yeah. I practiced finishing.
Yes.
I didn't practice finishing it
like
fast.
Like I'm one to talk here.
Well, actually, that's something to bring up. You know, mm-hmm. once again, you're whimsical. Yeah, I could just long jump 10 feet without trying and get a story. So I finished this race on Saturday morning and then head to the ballpark on Saturday afternoon. I'm a little fatigued.
Sure.
Okay.
You just ran 13.1
miles. Actually, my watch said 13.2.
Oh, boy.
I think it's because of the variance as you, like...
The wiggle in the route.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I get to the ballpark, and Illinois baseball has a student manager named Benny Linehart. Great guy. He's from Monticello. Turns out that on Friday night, Benny signed up for the marathon. And
he decided on Friday night to run it and Saturday morning.
Yeah, right.
A full 26?
26.2. Yeah. I said, wow, Benny. Did it at an 8-minute and 30-second pace. That's a pretty good pretty good marathon pace.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Benny, you just decided. I said, how long was your longest run before this? He said, 15 miles. I said, okay, that makes sense. If you can get if you got up to 15, you can stretch yourself from there if you're in decent shape. That's actually not that big of a gap. He's like, no, that was a while ago. No training.
Zero training. Signed up Friday night. Ran 26 miles Saturday morning.
That's my understanding. Now, make no mistake, Benny is fit.
In shape.
Yes. He's fit. But still, anyway. So, I said, here I've spent the last 2 to 3 months training for this thing just so I could finish. And on a whim, you said, with less than 24 hours notice, I'm going to go run a marathon.
That's insanity.
So now, Ella, you're, approach to the whole thing. I guess maybe there's something to it.
There's totally something to it. Just kind of relax, have some fun. I heard the story about Benny because they announced it over the, PA system at the mm-hmm. baseball game. I just can't believe he did the full 26.2. And my best friend is at Wash U for PT school. And she's like, do you know all the things that could go wrong if you just run a full marathon on a whim? And I was like, he looks like he's fine. He's like back to work.
Yep.
Now,
and also as a student manager, you show up to a baseball game. It's not like me where I don't have to do a lot of heavy physical activity. You're running around in batting practice, setting this up, doing this for the guys, catching things. And, there's some good physical exertion involved with this after you run the marathon.
Yes. Here's my question. Did you at any point Saturday before the game run into Kirk Courtright, and did he say 12 miles?
That's a warm-up.
For those who don't know, Illini assistant coach Courtright has done those 50-mile runs. He's done like a 75-mile or something like that.
He's done, I think, 100.
Yeah.
Like an ultra.
Like an ultra, ultra 100-miler.
Yeah.
Yes.
Man, and he, Kurt, you've talked to him about this, but
yes.
He is, the mind's a powerful tool. That's
yes.
kind of his approach to the whole thing.
Yes.
Speaking of which,
mm-hmm.
a moment that almost made me cry.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday's game for baseball was the annual honor and serve day.
Mm-hmm.
And Ella, you were there for this too. Because you were working the streaming cast of it. The jerseys that were auctioned off, and by the way, I believe you can still, if you reach out to the baseball office, if you still want to purchase a jersey, the donations go to the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Now, why there? Well, there's a former baseball player, Dom Altobelli, who had conjoined twins that were separated at that hospital. And they're thriving and living great lives. This has all been documented on even Big Ten Network, The Journey. So some of you might be familiar with this. But anyway, Kurt and his wife, Quincy, have a young son, toddler age, that was born with spina bifida. He's had to have all kinds of, in utero surgery and mm-hmm. all that. And they went to this hospital. Like, huge impact.
Because of Dom, right? Wasn't that the
story?
Yeah,
that's how he got connected.
He got connected to the hospital through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all the proceeds are going to this hospital. So yesterday, little Creed threw out the first pitch from 6 feet away. He's a, toddler. And he threw two baseballs at once.
That's great.
Hearts in your throat kind of.
Absolutely.
It was, it was precious.
Did Kurt run the marathon?
No.
Or he doesn't? He doesn't touch anything that's 26 miles.
I don't think so. I don't think. Yeah,
you got to go at least 50 for him to get involved.
Yeah, but
yeah, that's great.
Anyway, so there's still a moment to get in there on that if you want to participate in the donation side of the.
Those are the Army fatigue jerseys. The
camouflage.
Yeah,
but the honor and serve part of it's really broadened over the years to various, I would call it, heroes, mm-hmm. community heroes,
mm-hmm.
frontline type folk.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I do need to ask, we're going to do your times, right? Don't you have to announce your times, or is that like Ella, can you tell us what you, again, you didn't practice, you just decided to run 13 miles and count on your high school cross-country background to get you through. So what was your time on Saturday?
I ran at an hour and 44 minutes, so right under an 8-minute pace.
That is fast for not preparing. Do you run? Like, you at least jog around campus, right? It's not like you're just running for the first time in months.
No, I still run all the time. Just, okay. It's my favorite way to clear my head, but it's kind of like...
You didn't prepare with a, you know, practice 12 miles or whatever.
Eight was as far as I went before, and then you just go from eight to 13 and have a ball.
That gives me another question. Where on campus do you like to run? I remember where some people run down to the Arboretum and then back and this and that. What's the do you run around town? Do you run on campus? Where do you run?
Say, I feel weird plugging my running route, but it's down. I head down.
I'll
into
be
campus.
There tomorrow morning.
Seriously, it's, I'm like, yeah, uh-oh,
yeah,
everybody.
Yeah.
Go kind of into the main quad because I meet up with one of my best friends.
Sure.
Who lives at a sorority house in Champaign, Iowa and Urbana. Meet on the quad.
Perfect.
And then we go up, over to 4th.
Okay.
Up, over to Oak.
Mm.
Oak, up to St. Mary's, and then we just rip St. Mary's down. You can do gardens, and then you can... You go by the horses. If you need more miles, you hop into Urbana. There's a park around there to get a couple miles in. Neighborhoods back there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of just putz around until you get the number you need on your watch.
Fascinating.
What was your... Did you have a favorite moment on the route? So, Robert, the route for the half basically starts at the I Hotel.
Okay.
First in St. Mary's.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes straight north on First Street, takes a right on Green. You go through Campus Town. You do a whole loop through Urbana, come back to the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing the full marathon, you go past the stadium, and then you go through Champaign and Savoy.
Okay.
So the Urbana side is what we ran through. So did you have a favorite moment, Ella?
I did. I really have the best friends, so they were all out up and early. They are not early risers, so it was hilarious hearing the stories later of how they got woken up. They made it out on the course, and I know that where our sorority house is, they were going to be around mile 11. So I was telling my friend I was running with, I was like, okay, like, if we're feeling it at mile 11, like, you have to lock in. Like, you can't run this fast and then look bad at mile 11 when everybody's there. So, you know, mile 10's there. You're like, okay, like, three more to go. Just make it to 11. And, like, look good while making it to 11. Mm-hmm. So, I get to 11. I'm like, whoo, they're not there. And I'm like, uh-oh, they're at 12.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, we have another mile of, like, trying to look. And then I got there to 12, and they were all there on the corner. Oh. And it was hilarious. But their rationale was that they could not beat me from 11 to the stadium. So, they had to meet me at 12 and get to the stadium faster. That was a more direct path. So, it was just funny coming up on 11, being like, okay, I made it. And then the realization of, like, ooh, they all went to 12. But it was so fun. They had all the funny posters, and it was a great time. So, yeah.
Your time, sir?
2 hours and 20 minutes.
That's very respectable. What's the pace?
It was 10:50, 10 minutes and 50 seconds.
Do they do the pacer signs of this one? Where you can, if you want to run your pace, you run the long.
Yeah. I think in these days of watches and everything, I don't know if they're quite as necessary.
Because you can just look at your arm and see what your pace is.
Yes. But still, it gives you like a, hey, if I just want to run with this person or this group of people, I'll sort of be in the ballpark. Let me tell you if it's okay, I'm sort of meandering here from, you know, the task at hand. I hope you don't mind that I'm diving into a side story here.
I think I can handle that.
You sure?
I think I can handle the chaos of that.
Okay. And Ella, I'll be curious if you experienced this similarly. Take a right on First Street onto Green Street. And believe it or not, there is... What's the number one thing that people say when they come back to campus if they haven't been here in a while?
That all the tall buildings are green.
It's all about the high rises.
Yep. Yep. So you got that. Believe it or not, there is... like nobody's ever in the middle of Green Street unless they're celebrating a Final Four.
Sure.
So it's rare. But Green Street is completely closed off. And there is, believe it or not, a slight downward slope from First Street to, like, 6, the alma mater.
Hmm.
So it was very cool. First of all, you're only at mile 1. You're feeling fine. Everything's great. And you're just kind of a little bit of a gentle downward slope. So you just see the whole parade of a pack of humanity, it looks like.
Sure.
Just running through this canyon of Green Street.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it. Very cool moment.
That's really great.
Yeah. I just kind of felt like, you know, it's my town, my campus.
Yeah.
It would have all the vibes for you.
Yes. Yes. Go ahead.
This is my worst, but if you want to stay on that.
No, keep going because I'm going to pivot a little bit.
I knew it was coming, and it's still, I think, the toughest part of the race. When you get back at the close of the half marathon loop, you're coming west on Pennsylvania.
Okay,
so you cross Lincoln, you're looking straight down, you can see the football indoor, and before you get there, you turn north on 6th.
Yep.
Right? Yeah, and you go by the art museum, and you can see Huff Hall. Okay, I'm close. There's the stadium. We're close. Mm-hmm. You turn left. Now you're going along the armory. I was going right here along the armory. I was thinking, light the eye.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, should have worn a light the eye something to just free advertising for us. Missed opportunity.
You could have carried the light all 13 miles, but we'll go on. Continue.
Next year.
Mm-hmm.
You get to 4th and Greg.
Yep.
That's right. You turn on Gregory. 4th and Greg.
Mm-hmm.
Right here by the armory, like almost to the stadium. They make you turn left. Full marathoners go to the right.
Okay.
You're going to shoot out into Champaign and do what you do.
Yep.
Half marathoners turn left. You have to, they have to, it's a few hundred yards short or something. So they make you do a loop through the circle drive of Huff, cross the street and go back in that circle drive of that other building. It's like the housing administration building.
Yep. Yep.
I can't remember the name of that building off the top of my head.
Uh huh.
And then, so it's just like this cruel, like, go do the cul-de-sac.
You can see the stadium. Yeah. You know how close you are to the finish, but you got to run a couple circles just to get to 13.
Yeah. The finish is just tough.
Yeah.
And then you go back onto Greg and turn down and go along the east side of what is or was known as the six-pack.
Mm-hmm. Still known as the six-pack, right? Like, people still call it the six-pack, even though it's, like, more dorms now.
Yeah, always okay, six-pack. Good.
Anyway, so did you feel that, Ella, where you're just like, oh, why is this little extra thing here?
No, the first time I ran it, I was like, what am I doing? Like, I'm like, it's a loop, and you think it's like a tiny loop, and then you kind of realize you have to put a little bit of distance on it to get around. And that was the moment where Mac and I looked at each other and we were like, oh, we're really not almost done. She was like, and everybody around you is like, you're almost there. Like, I think it's like you have 1K left when you're there, and they're like, just like, you're right there. And I'm like, I don't feel right there, but I can see the stadium. I hope I'm right there. So, yeah, it's not the, for course wise, I'd rather have another extra loop, but I think for me, the worst part is getting stuck in the park for, what is it, 8 and 9 and 10? They kind of, you have all this crowd. It's so fun. You, as you were talking about that first mile, it's just people. And then the miles where it gets gritty, you're like in the middle of nowhere, Urbana. And if you don't have a running buddy, it's just you at some local park with like a DJ.
It is Meadowbrook Park that she's referring to.
Got it.
Been there?
Yes.
Yeah.
I know where you're at.
It's a nice park, but... Yeah, it's funny you say that because that reminds me of when I was a student and had a friend that actually got engaged at Meadowbrook Park. And as she told the story, it was like some far off distant place where there's sculptures out in the park. I don't know if you saw them.
It's a weird place. And it does feel that. I'm like, I felt like I was in like a, there's nobody there. And it's just you and the runners. And you're all kind of like, where are the people are supposed to cheer?
And now as a... what's funny to me is like now as a community member for 20 years, like, oh, I've used Meadowbrook plenty of time to get some training runs in.
Sure.
And it is hard at that point in the race. It's just like, oh, this thing keeps going.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, oh, yeah, we all know Meadowbrook Park.
So you're just running the loop trail there, like on the trail?
It's like 3/4 of a loop.
Okay.
It's just funny to me because like students, Meadowbrook Park is might as well be in Kentucky.
Yeah,
it's like where am I? Like it's only like a mile from campus,
right?
But it's just this different world where students don't venture to. So I think that's I find that amusing just because I remember the same story being told. Like he took me to this place far away, and there was art in there. There was art out there, and then he got on his knees, and I was like, oh, that's Meadowbrook Park.
It has to be one of the flatter marathons/half marathons like in the country, right? Yeah. Like
that's why people like it to come to try to qualify for Boston or wherever.
Got
that
it.
Needs a qualifying time.
No hills. I mean, where is there a hill? Is there a hill?
They seem to exist.
Yeah.
Meadowbrook Park has them.
You feel them. They're there.
There's gradual inclines, but it's no like that's the hill.
It's not the Beacon Hill in Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is where I was going to pivot earlier. My wife ran the St. Louis half years ago.
So did I.
And I went out to support her, and I saw her at like the 5 mile mark or something like that. And then I went to a spot that was near the 11 miles. So she had about 2 miles left. You turn and you're headed back downtown at that point. And my sister-in-law joined me at that spot just to cheer her on. And she brought her kids and they had a sign. And I want the etiquette of this. I want both of you runners to tell me what this is. You could tell that my wife was struggling at this point. You've got some hills there, and then you've got basically from that point then, you've got a downtown toward, or downhill toward downtown. But that little piece is hilly, and she's at mile 11 and all this stuff. So my sister-in-law joined her. Like, it was like, oh, I'll just run with her. So she went out and ran, but then ran through the finish and people cheering. And I was like, that's a little cheaty, right? Like, you don't get that applause. You don't get to start at mile 11. Now, she did it just to support her sister.
Is she helping herself to a Mylar and a medal and some chocolate milk?
No, she did not. But it was kind of like a... Like, if I'm a runner and I'm at mile 11, I see somebody come over the barricade and just start running, I'm like, I didn't just go through this 11 miles for you to run 2 miles and wave to the crowd at the end. Like, there's some investment here to get out on these streets. So, do you have an issue with that? Any runners? Ella, do you have an opinion on that? Do you care?
I mean, not really. Everybody's got to get through it, like, on their own. I mean, running's hard. So, however, if... Yeah. I think if somebody jumped in with me, like one of my brothers, I'd be like, okay, I like the spotlight. Like, let me have it a little bit.
Right, right.
But yep. I think if I'm feeling it and they can, you know, see that I'm feeling it, I'd rather finish with them than without.
No issue with it. I would also say at that point in the race, the amount of things you care about at all are pretty low.
It's just like, get me 2 more miles and get me to that Gatorade or whatever.
You know, I'm running past all these buildings and I'm running past Huff Hall. I'm thinking, oh, there's volleyball and Chris Thomas. And then my brain is like, we don't care.
Mm-hmm.
We just want to stop running. Like, yes. Stop thinking about things and stop running. And you have to like, no, I have to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you that on Saturday, I did go for another walk on the beach and I had 14,000 steps. So pretty much we had the exact same exertion, right?
Well, I'll tell you this. You walking is, I'm sure there's research that somebody can put walking may be far better exercise in the long run.
Mm.
No pun intended.
Mm.
I mean, this is good. I mean, it's not bad to do distance running by any means, but walking accomplishes a lot.
I heard that stat once. This is like so podcasty to just throw something out without any research and just to talk about it, but I'm about to do it.
Well, as long as you're recognizing it. The stat, might be wrong.
The stat was, except for high-level athletes running fast paces, running 13 miles and walking 13 miles burns the same calories because it takes so much longer to walk it. Even though your heart rate's higher and this and that, you burn the same number of calories. Anyone?
All right.
Anyone?
Exercise physiologist, drop a comment.
Yes.
Goodness knows people on social media wouldn't just offer their own opinions on matters of science.
The way I heard it framed is like
experts.
2 hours of running versus, I mean, 13 miles is going to take you 5-6 hours of walking or whatever. And because it's that much more exertion, it's the same calories burned. You just do it faster when you're running. But I don't know this to be the case, but... I'm just going to claim it and put it out there.
Feel free to go walk 13.1 miles.
I've done it. See how it does. I've done it. It's 12. What's Giant City's loop? It's 13 miles, I think. Giant City State Park, Southern Illinois. Ever been there? Down there south of Carbondale.
Okay.
Giant City has a loop around the outside of the park, and I believe it's 13 miles. I've done it with my wife.
Do we need to go back and re-record a caveat? Like, if you don't want to listen to 20 minutes of marathon,
we'll put it in
stories,
the notes.
Okay.
Put it in the notes.
So,
yes.
Thank you to those who have stuck with us.
Mm-hmm.
Ella, great job.
Yes.
Thanks, guys.
Good job for both of you.
Yes. And great job. And also, I just want to say, the community shines. Just for the people that put it on, the people that volunteer, the organizers, the whole thing. And I'm not an expert, and I've done a ton of races, mm-hmm. but I hear people say it's one of the top races. And I'm not kidding you when I say that.
One of the top races in the portal.
One of the top. We'll be okay. Well, let's get into matters of the Illini.
Yes. Yes.
For you, matters of the heart.
For people who actually tuned in to hear about the subject of the podcast.
This episode of Light the Eye brought to you by Logic Coworking and Logic Events. We've been telling you about how Logic Coworking is a great environment for you to be productive in a quiet, distraction-free area, whether it's for one day or for a long-term solution as a remote worker. But also, Logic Events offers a fantastic space for you to host, whether it be a one-time business gathering or a monthly networking event. Logic's welcoming environment combines with Blue Dragon Catering to offer excellent luncheon experiences for your group. Logic's friendly staff will be there on site to welcome your guests, and it's centrally located in Champaign with ample and convenient parking. Plus, they fully prepare the event space for you with the tables, chairs, tablecloths, AV equipment, microphones, everything, you name it. And there's affordable rates right now, especially for those recurring monthly events with flexible scheduling. So check out Logic Events with two trusted partners and one seamless luncheon experience. Logic Events and Logic Coworking, sponsoring Light the Eye. Well, Robert, the NFL draft has come and gone, and Illinois, I think I was surprised a little bit. We were not surprised that Gabe Backus went first off the board among Illinois players. J.C. Davis also got a draft. Miles Scott, a late-round pickup by the Denver Broncos. But Luke Altmyer did not get drafted, and I felt like he would have. That comes from a place of my deep analytical knowledge and experience of how GMs operate in the NFL and what exactly they're looking for. No, actually, it doesn't come from that. It just comes from, you know, I don't know, hype.
Yes.
I have to, you know, so remember that for those of a certain generation, the Seinfeld episode with Gale, and Kramer's like, Jerry, she snubbed me. She snubbed me. The NFL, did they snub him?
I mean, yes, but I don't want to.
Not all the articles are saying it's fuel.
Yes, it is.
He said that, I think.
There's not much difference these days between Miles Scott and somebody getting a undrafted free agent contract. Like, once you're at that level, that even if you're not picked in the seventh round, yeah, there's probably more guaranteed money and however they work it, but it's not that big of a insult from a seventh round draft pick to an undrafted free agent or whatever. To me, it was height.
Height.
Yes.
Like actual how tall he is?
Yes. To me, it's just a simple, you know,
Pavia got an invite to a mini camp, so.
It makes me think of the funny tweet that I can't share that. Somebody tweeted.
Now you're sharing
it. How insulting that he got invited to a mini camp. Why not a regular camp? That's such a good joke. I wish I could see the person who tweeted it. It's such a good joke. Anyway, you know, Allmyer's probably 6'1 and a half, 6'2. NFL just loves their quarterbacks to either be wildly athletic like a Kyler Murray who can escape any pocket, or be tall with a long arm and see over this and that. So I just have this bias of height and quarterbacks, and that the NFL is just going to always be biased toward the taller guys with the, you know, the
That's why
high
I wasn't
release
picked.
Point. And yes. So, in that sense, it doesn't mean he can't hang on like Tommy DeVito did. It doesn't mean he can't find a spot. This is now when they will determine that. I look at the draft as being teams want to claim the rights to a certain player. And in those late rounds, they're not worried about losing out on an Altmaier as a potential backup quarterback. They're more worried about getting that last defensive lineman who has the size and the measurables, and they think they can turn him into something, and that's where they spend their picks. So that's why I just think it's rare for a quarterback to go this late. And, you know, look, Brock Purdy was Mr. Irrelevant, right? The last player picked in a draft. It was all because of the height concerns with him, and he found it and figured it out, and he's a starter in the NFL now. So I hope Luke can take the UDFA route and find the same path.
Is there an Illinois quarterback from, let's say, 1980 to the present that you would put in the category of a great Illini quarterback that didn't make it as a pro with some modicum of success?
I thought Kirk Kittner would have a better pro career just because of what the NFL was at the time, looking for pocket passers with strong arms, see the field well, make the connection. There wasn't much concern about mobility back then and this and that. So I really thought Kirk Kittner would hang around. He got some starts with the Falcons, but just didn't really stick in the NFL. So
sure, but he still got there.
Yep.
And still made starts. Tommy DeVito did.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you look back, Tony Eason, right?
Tony Eason started a Super Bowl.
Dave Wilson, did he?
He hung around for a little bit, but yeah, Jeff George is the only Illini QB with long-term success. I mean, right. Jeff George was starting a playoff game I attended. It was Rams-Vikings. What was it, 0-1? Jeff George was a starter still. That was 12 years after he was drafted or whatever. So, he hung around a long time just because of his incredibly powerful arm.
Here's where I was going. Yeah. I mean, Luke Altmaier is in the conversation of greatest Illinois quarterback. And not looking at their pro career. I'm mm-hmm. just talking about their Illinois career.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely in that upper echelon, right? He was flirting with some records.
I would say definitely top five Illini quarterback, yes.
And my point is, wouldn't it be strange if he was the one that, like, didn't work in the pros when actually people thought, like, yeah, he's going to be probably the first surefire pro since Kirk Kittner.
Yep.
Even though, I mean, Tommy was a little bit of a dark horse to make it.
Sure.
So you follow with me? And so anyways, yeah, that to say is like, mm-hmm. Is Luke Altmaier, like, is he going to be looked back at as like, wow, he was a really good college quarterback but didn't have in the NFL? You want to know that your great college player was also a great pro.
Yes.
Or a solid pro, I mean.
The thing about the quarterback position is there are maybe 20 truly great quarterbacks in the world. Right,
I know.
You know,
it's weird.
The guy who's the 25th best quarterback. Every fan of that team hates that guy and wants him replaced immediately. Get rid of this bum.
How many NFL GMs would say right now, if I could upgrade a quarterback, I would? Like, there's not 32 guys.
Yes.
That can do the job.
Yes.
In the way you want it done.
Yes. So that's why it's the hardest position to be drafted. It's the hardest position to stick around. Teams will be like, nope, this guy does not have it. You know, just certain measurables that just aren't there. He can't make the opposite hash 20-yard sideline throw. Get rid of him. We have to have somebody who can make that throw, and we'll see if then they have the brain capabilities of reading defenses and staying mistake-free and avoiding the rush and everything else that goes into it. So it's just impossible, right? Like, the reason Illinois has had one solid starter for a long time in the NFL in Jeff George is it's just really hard. You know,
yeah.
It's really hard to be one of the 20 best. And when you find that guy, teams will stick with the guy for, you know, how long was Ben Roethlisberger at Pittsburgh. It's like we're going to stick with, we've found one of them, and we will stick with him for as long as possible. So those jobs aren't coming open. So there are probably 15 jobs in the NFL right now that are just set. You're not going to take that guy out. So teams in the draft are looking for backups, but they're also looking for, you know, there's maybe 12 teams looking for that one specimen of a starter. And it's just really, really hard to break in. Whereas a safety like Miles Scott, and teams will carry six safeties, and maybe we found a guy, maybe we put him on the practice squad for a couple years, maybe he develops into this, showed some good instincts, there's a lot of patience with that and this and that. And quarterbacks, it's the opposite of, you know, it's just they are trying to find one specific thing, and if you don't have all the boxes checked, you're not very important to them.
Two guys invited to mini camps, Josh Kreutz and Dylan Rosiak. Six were undrafted free agent signees. Luke Altmyer to the Lions, Melvin Priestley to the Lions, Tanner Arkin to the Patriots, Hank Beatty to the Titans, Josh Geske to the Packers, James Thompson Jr., 49ers. And then, of course, Akis, Davis, and Scott were all drafted. 11 guys, ranging from drafted to mini camp invitees.
Mm-hmm. I think my biggest takeaway with this draft, if we just look at number of draft picks, like Indiana had 8 players picked. You know, that's probably the final exclamation point on Kurt Cignetti going out in the portal and finding dudes. You know, for Indiana to have 8 players picked is insane. Their ability to spot talent in both high school and in the portal is pretty incredible. I think Indiana was like 9th on the list of most draft picks and this and that, and they have very few 4-stars on their roster. But I just want to point out, I tweeted this the other day, like Auburn had, 10 draft picks the last 2 years, and they have like 11 wins or something like that. Florida has 12 draft picks the last 2 drafts. They have 12 wins the last 2 years. Illinois has 4 draft picks the last 2 drafts and 19 wins. That, to me, is wildly impressive. If you look at the numbers of players picked, you see, oh, Miami had 9 or maybe 10 players drafted. Oh, that was a really talented team that made it, you know, from the first round of the playoff all the way to the title game. Oh, I see that. Oh, these teams really did have a lot of talent there. This is, you can believe recruiting rankings if you want, but on the other side, the true measure of how much talent did these teams had is, do the NFL teams want them and are willing to spend draft picks on them? And you see the teams that have risen to the top are the teams that had a lot of talent. Illinois has just had 4 draft picks the last 4 years. I mean, that's good. It's better than the 0 draft picks of this. But to win 19 games with those rosters, you know, these were 2 teams that were majority junior and senior, and these junior and senior classes only had 4 draft picks. That speaks a lot to the development of these teams. To the undrafted free agent thing there is like, I think teams are noticing, especially like teams that have drafted other Illinois players before, the Patriots. The Broncos are chasing Illini players. They're so happy with Pat Bryant. And
Lions,
same thing. I think they have identified, like, hey, there's going to be some underrated players that aren't going to be high on many draft boards, but there's some ballers here. There's some football players here, and we should really chase them. Because, look, it's hard to find talent, and of true NFL talent, if defined by draft picks, and true NFL talent, only just had 4 draft picks in 2 seasons. And other teams, Iowa had like 10 in those same seasons or whatever. So for Illinois to take that level of talent and win 19 games, a 10-3 season, and a 9-4 season, it's just an incredible job by the staff.
You know what Big Ten team, at least one, that did not have an NFL draft pick this year?
Wisconsin didn't,
you
I believe.
You are correct, sir.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Per ESPN Madison, the Badgers did not have a player selected in the NFL draft for the first time since 1978.
Yep. I mean, it just speaks to what has happened there. If there's a school that missed out on, what do you think we should have planned and prepared for the portal and NIL era? It's Wisconsin.
Well, they got a new AD coming.
Yes.
Because of it.
And look, the old AD was not fired. He took a job with the conference. But, I mean, if they were so much struggling with NIL and this.
What are you insinuating,
sir? He wasn't fired, but I think some people were like, hey, it might be time to have someone who understands how the 2020s work run our program. So that's all I have to say about that.
Okay. Okay. Now, speaking of that, because there is been will player X go to the draft or stay? Will player X get a little more money here perhaps and up their draft stock so they can make more money when they go to the NFL? Be developed here. J.C. Davis is the most recent example of that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to put that alongside the news that came out over the weekend. At least reports were that Andre Stojakovic, has he said it officially? Because I haven't seen. That Andre,
I believe so.
Yeah, yeah. On the basketball side, Andre Stojakovic is putting his name in the NBA draft, but he will
retain his
eligibility.
Eligibility, yes.
Yes. So, in other words, he could very much be back on the Illinois roster. For him, that kind of move makes 100% sense. What do you have to lose? Nothing. You get feedback from the NBA on your pro readiness, and if somebody's like, whoa, I just looked at your tape and realized, yeah, you're a late first-round pick. Here's, great. Otherwise, he learns that I need to work on this, this, and this, and I will come back to Illinois and make a nice check from NIL money and what have you. So there's nothing for him to lose. Yep. But I've heard it expressed, like, the angst that comes with this now. This is not the first go-around of this. Like, the will he or will he not go for the fans? And you just have to. There was this with Keaton.
Mm-hmm.
And it went from, we didn't know who Keaton was, in a sense.
Sure.
To, oh, Keaton's really good.
Mm-hmm.
To, well, he's probably now going to be an NBA. He's an NBA talent, but he would stay for better NIL money, right?
Mm-hmm.
To, like, oh, he's a lottery pick. And most people are like, get it. He's got to go.
Yes.
Wish he would stay, but I understand. But there's these tweeners.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Good way to frame it.
This brings me anxiety as a fan. And I get it because, first of all, your known quantity is much more comforting than your unknown quantity. But just know that it's a good problem when you have players on your roster that can go pro and have a decision to make.
Yes.
This may all be for a label for a guy like Stojakovic. I don't know. It might just be for a label. I have to announce that I'm going into the draft. I have to announce that I'm retaining my eligibility. Maybe everybody in the world that's in his camp knows this is only for the feedback and going through the process. All I'm saying is it's a good thing if you have these anxieties as a fan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we say the same thing in December each year when a Xavier Scott is deciding whether to go or to come back. You want 10 of those guys making that decision every year, even though it gives you like, oh my gosh, well, if he leaves, or do we have any freshman corners who are ready, or sophomores, or like, or does that leave us high and dry? And no, that's the program you want.
Yeah. That's usually the coaches are aware of these things too.
Yes. Yes.
And maybe thinking about future replacements for each position.
Yes. And the process is a good one now. NBA compared to, say, 15 years ago, has gotten so much better about here is very real feedback on your draft potential for you to make your decision with. And for players to declare and go through that process with still having the ability to, at the end of that process, just to take their name back out, that's a good thing for those players to learn because they can get. You know, look, last year people were like, would Will Riley really go first round? And if he wouldn't go first round, might he come back? And this is the NIL era and this and that. And went through the process and found out he's a first round pick and was a first round pick. And here we are. So, yeah, I think it's a good thing. It's why I try not to obsess over the over the football or the basketball roster until it gets into well into May.
You leave your obsessing solely to the football roster?
Oh, I leave my obsessing to I'm not going to say it. I was going to say something inappropriate, but I'm leaving it alone.
It's like the third time in this episode you've been your tongue.
Just be glad that I have this little switch. I can turn that part of my brain off immediately, and the words don't come out. But I'll just say that this is all good. I expect he'll come back. I expect he'll get some feedback. Obviously, his three-point shooting percentage was like 226%, I believe. I think you're going to get feedback from the NBA of like, we are a – at your height, you got to be able to shoot the three, and we don't see it yet, and go work on that. And I think that's what will occur. But
he'll get some feedbackovich.
I need a button where I can hit a rim shot. Can we get that installed right over here? But no, overall, good thing, and I think he'll be back.
Okay. Then this also kind of relates. And I half gloss over and I half go, huh, because for a number of times now we have heard about the possibility of what I call 5 for 5.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, other people I think have called it that. I don't know if that's an official
phrase, 5 to play 5
phraseology.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I know it would at least impact football, but all sports. All sports everywhere, mm-hmm. at the Division I level or the NCAA level?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. You get 5 years to play 5 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
No more red shirts.
Mm-hmm.
No more hardship waivers, right? And there's probably exceptions, but in general, the stuff that we mostly hear about.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, Robert Rosenthal, come in as a freshman in 2026, this fall,
mm-hmm.
the clock starts. Mm-hmm. Actually, this latest thing is the clock starts when you graduate high school.
Mm-hmm.
You've either turned 19 or you've graduated high school. Whatever happens first, click go. You get 5 years to play up to 5 seasons. I busted my knee. I can't play this first season. Do I get 5 more years? No. Now just you get 4 years mm-hmm. left.
Yep.
Oh, I busted my knee again. The other one. I didn't play my second season. Do I get to play 4 at least? No. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
But it stops the whole, everything rolls over. Can you come back? Who gets qualifies here? It takes out a lot of the complexity and the adjudication of each
sure.
individual case.
Mm-hmm.
Coaches have been clamoring for it. It looked like it was in the red zone, and then all of a sudden it wasn't. And now the latest reporting, at least of last week, was it may be coming again.
Mm-hmm.
And then the interesting thing is it pertains to your favorite team. Does it retroactively apply?
Yep.
The number one guy you would think of, I'm sure there's a few football cases, but in basketball you would think of Kylan Boswell.
Yes.
Because he's all the players that played 4 years consecutively, freshman through senior, never took a red shirt.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think to talk about this, we have to talk a little bit about the history. Which is, it used to be freshmen were ineligible, right? So you get 4 years, you would come in, you sit, and you go to class, and you'd learn things, and then you could start playing as a sophomore. This was up until early 70s, I believe. I think it was early 70s when freshmen became eligible to play. So then it was basically, that's 4 for 4. Then this idea of redshirting came in. Of, hey, it was a really good thing that these freshmen didn't have to worry about competition and didn't have to worry about they could get acclimated to school and class and football or basketball or whatever and play. So then 5 to play 4 became a thing. So everybody has that 5-year clock, but you only get 4 years on the field. So at any point in those 4 years, you can take a red shirt. And it mostly happened for freshmen.
Yeah. Football loved it especially.
Yes.
Because football players are usually physically undersized.
Yes. So you can take a player, he's an offensive lineman, you can add 20 pounds of muscle to his frame that first year he's sitting out, and then he still has his 4 years of eligibility. So that was then 80s, 90s, all the way up to today, it was 5 to play 4, 5 to play 4. This came along with NIL, this got a little more complicated because, I mean, there's a whole bunch of layers to this, but one, you know, how much are these, say you've got some real NIL deal with some recruit who's coming in and he's going to do advertisements, but the team decides to redshirt him. Well, now he's not, how is he going to do his, this little campaign he was supposed to do for the local bank because he's actually not even on the field. Nobody knows who he is yet, you know, kind of thing. So that made it a little more, the red shirt became a little more complicated. There's a whole bunch of other layers to that. But that's when this question of eligibility started to happen. So you got the Diego Pavia lawsuit. He says, look, and I played JUCO football. I wasn't, JUCO football still doesn't allow me to do NIL. I come over to the NCAA, they say my JUCO years counted. And because my JUCO years counted, well, now I'm you're costing me money by saying I only have 2 years of eligibility playing NCAA football. I should get those years back. And a judge agreed. And so, okay, well, now what do you do with all JUCOs? Of like, does every JUCO then have 4 years of eligibility, even though they've played 2 years of JUCO ball? How do we do that? And so all of those questions started to, and then you've got the injury thing, you know, the injury red shirt became a thing. Jess Settles, let's use him in the 90s as the famous. He missed two entire seasons for Iowa basketball. And so Jess Settles, when he's playing his sixth year, he had used his red shirt and he got a medical red shirt because he missed 2 years due to injury. And people are like, why is Jess Settles still playing in his like sixth, seventh year of college? Well, you got those 4 years on the field is what the NCAA said. And if he lost it to injury, well, you haven't used your four yet. There's that player with Miami, that tight end who got nine total years because he had five season-ending injuries. And so it wasn't until the ninth year that he said, well, here's actually technically only my fourth year. So all of that leads into this moment, and it's why it was likely to happen last year. Brett Bielema talked about it like it was going to happen. All of that led up to this moment of, look, it's going to happen. They're just going to say, look, you get 5 years. You can play all 5 years. If you're not ready yet, you redshirt, fine. You still just get 5 years. You get injured, too bad, fine. You still just get 5 years. Let's stop extending past five. Let's stop arguing over JUCO and this and that. You get a clock that starts. You get five full years to play. Your clock ends, ball game. And that's the point behind why they want to do this. The resistance was, well, why are we letting them go 5 years? School is always been freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. Most everybody gets their degree in 4 years. It should just be 4 years. This is college. What are we going to keep these players around forever? But I think what everything is coalescing around right now is this idea of like, you know what, let's just make it five. And it would be more or less the NCAA saying, and don't come up to us with these, I play JUCO, can I have extra years? Don't come up with us. Don't come to us with all these other little things. Just say, fine, you get a clock. It starts. When the clock ends, you're done. Don't talk to us. Don't try to get a ninth year. You're done. And that's where this is going to go. And it aligns with the professionals that are coming over from Europe. Again, David Mirkovic couldn't play college basketball in Montenegro. So what you do over there, you're not moving on to college basketball. You move on to the lower levels of the pro leagues. It's like going and playing, what's the baseball in the Cape Cod or whatever? You know, it's essentially that kind of a thing is what they're playing, like low-level professional ball, if you will. Is that a good example, baseball guy?
Well, yes and no, because that's a league that exists for high-level college prospects.
Got it.
In the summer, when in the off season,
got it,
for college baseball's off season.
Yes, I'm just trying to make an example of.
But yeah, it makes. Yeah.
When he turns 19 or 18 in Montenegro, he can't just go play for Montenegro State. There is no college basketball. The next level before pros there is the low level of the pros. So when everybody's like, oh, Illinois is getting all these professionals from Europe to play for their basketball team, well, they got a 19-year-old kid who was just doing what 19-year-old kids do after the season.
Montenegro, University of Montenegro Northwest Urbana Campus.
Yes. You have a mascot for that? We don't have mascots on this show.
We just have the sort of we don't? Okay, good to know. Yes,
good to know. Good to know.
What would happen? Never mind.
But yes, that's it is a this whole thing is this look, let's put everybody in the same box. And that's why every time Bielma talked about this over the last 2 years, why he was so confident this was gonna happen is like it's just the logical thing to do with the moment we're in. Let's stop with a waiver for this and a waiver for that and a lawsuit for this. Let's just start a clock and stop a clock. And yes, if that means somebody can play for 5 full years, then they can play for 5 full years. And that would mean David Mirkovic could play 4 more years in Champaign. Okay? It would just mean that, right? He could stick around for 5 full seasons and set basically every possible record that Dion and Kiwan set and, you know, leave here as the leading rebounder and leading point scorer and everything else. But that's where they're coalescing around this of like, it just makes the most sense to say, stop all the insanity with all these other things. It's 5 to play 5.
Side note, have you seen, it's been covered now that David Mirkovic has been taking a DJ class.
I did see Amanda Brennan's story on WCIA.
Yes. And his DJ name, I don't know how to pronounce it.
Oh, I did not see. I was just thinking it was DJ.
The word smirk.
Mm-hmm.
So
smirk?
Is it smirk? As in Smirkovich or is Smirkovic?
I think we're going to bring in Ella again. She might have. Well, this is two old guys talking about DJs. And DJ names. Ella, your opinion on what his DJ name is?
I have no clue.
Okay.
Yep.
Good.
Swing and a miss over
this
here.
This is a serious professional that we're dealing with over here.
What are your thoughts on, I mean, as a student, and you're around student athletes all the time with the BTN stuff you do, what do you think of this 5 to play 5 thing?
I think in this era of college sports, with there have been so many different rule changes, especially on the, I mean, I'm closest to the women's soccer side of things with mm-hmm. my friends. One of my best friends is committed to Michigan State, supposed to go her freshman year, and then they started coming out with all these new things about roster caps and numbers mm-hmm. on that. So then she got there, and they were like, well, you can't be on the team technically yet. And they were like, you know, she's like, no, you recruited me. Anyways, long stories of just the NCAA has always done weird things.
Yep.
They do weird things with programs. I don't know how this 5 for 5 would affect now women's soccer roster numbers after they just put a 28-player cap on it. I think it'll be interesting to see how it shakes about how many lawsuits come out if you don't factor in seniors. And mm-hmm. they came out today and said that it is not retroactive. So that takes out the Kylan Boswell angle.
Mm.
Thank you for knowing that.
I did not see that.
But I don't know if, I mean, you can say that now, but how many lawsuits come out after that?
And then there's two lawsuits next week, and it changes in two weeks. The whole point
was to prevent lawsuits,
because
NCAA cannot get out of court. So this is supposed to do it. But then if you leave out all these seniors and you're looking at the UNC player who entered the transfer portal expecting the 5 for 5 rule to pass and for him to be included. I know a lot of other college basketball players did too. You're going to the court, you're seeing if you can sue them, and NCAA's back in a lawsuit again.
Yep. Well, this is America. You're never going to avoid lawsuits.
Yeah, it'll be.
We're going to celebrate 250 years of our right to sue people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there is this point with it of, you know, this happened with the 2020 recruiting classes, that when the COVID waiver came along, and there were roster limits everywhere, and they just said, hey, everybody, your eligibility didn't count for this COVID season, so you get an extra year. Well, then when everybody was doing that math, a high school senior then, who, much like what Ella just described here with her friend, had a spot, and then they're like, oh, gosh, we got these 9 other guys hanging around and sticking around now, so we actually don't have a spot for you, you know, and they tried to make up for it with like over the scholarship limit that first year and this and that, but it never fully got there. You're a high school senior in 2020. There were a lot of people who like thought they were going to this or that school, and they're like, oh gosh, no, we just got our whole roster back. So yeah, we don't really have a scholarship for you. Sorry. And that happened to a ton of high schoolers then. And that would happen here with 5 for 5 if there aren't retroactive things and like what we just talked about. If there are players that are coming back, well, that's taking a scholarship spot from somebody. So it's complicated.
It's just like when you say, Mom, Dad, can you store my couch in your house? It'd only be a few months until I get a new place. Mm-hmm. And it's like still there years later.
Yes.
And then it's like, but we can't put another couch in until you get rid of this. I promise I'm going to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. No one can
get
say.
Get this stuff out of my house.
Yes. No one could say exactly what it would be like we just said with Ella of, look, if they do this and they say, okay, it's not retroactive, nobody from this year can get 5 years, well, then somebody sues, it changes, and now everybody can get 5 years. So it's wildly complicated, and it is college sports in 2026.
I mean, somebody comes to you and say, hey, can you watch my dog for a few days?
Mm-hmm. Like my son? Sorry, he's listening.
And then, you know, the dog ends up, you know, extenuating circumstances.
Are you saying you watch the dogs for 4 months?
And what if you wanted different dogs? Mm-hmm. Come in, mm-hmm. You still have those dogs. Like, we don't have room for more dogs right
I
now.
I should just say I do kind of miss the dogs. I complained to you about the dogs. I complained about having the dogs there. My son had a thing where he was staying, couldn't have his pets for 3 to 4 months. So my wife and I watched him, and then he took them back in February. But
I met the dogs.
It's so funny.
I say, they're wonderful dogs.
Very friendly.
They're also kind of a lot.
They are a lot. They are a whole bunch. It's such a weird thing, right? Like one morning, it's just like, I cannot wait until these dogs are gone. And then the next morning, it's like, I don't even want these dogs to leave. Like, what would I do without hanging out with them all day?
I know.
Such a crazy thing.
One more item before we go. Yep. I know you just love this. Mm-hmm. And this is under the category of similar to the way you want players on your team that are sought after by the pros. You want those good problems. Will they, won't they? You want your athletic department run by people who are sought after by other schools. Congratulations to Tom Moreland, Illinois' now outgoing chief commercial officer.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Moreland, the title is relatively new, but his scope included some things that every university athletic department has had for years, and other new things in the NIL space, but also external relations, fan-facing things, ticketing, stadium seating, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, Tom is now going to be the athletic director at the University of Toledo, in Toledo. And just like Roger Denny, who was the deputy AD, is now the athletic director at Oklahoma, another one moves into an athletic director position. So, good problem for Josh Whitman to have, that he is developing and producing athletic directors, and he'll go find another one.
Yes. And, you know, I think Tom's biggest accomplishment here was the reseating. And I know a lot of folks, you know, anytime you reseat a stadium or you reseat an arena, it's going to be like, hey, I've had these seats in my family for years. But Illinois needed, especially in this era where money matters so much, Illinois really needed to join the crowd of people that reseat their stadiums all the time, and the highest donors get the best seats, and it recycles every few years, and that's just how it goes now in the fundraising side of things. And so he handled both of those reseating things. I think it's kind of the biggest accomplishment for him here. But yeah, you're right. Like Roger Denny going to Oklahoma, him going there. If a bunch of coaches are hiring the assistants at Gonzaga, then you know Gonzaga is doing pretty good at basketball. And if a bunch of programs, including Oklahoma, are hiring ADs who worked for Josh Whitman, then his tree is growing. And I should probably also note, like on a personal level, Tom was very supportive for me. He solved a fire engine issue for me of parking, and we were supposed to do a thing for the Fox show in the morning, and I had to get approval to set up the night before because they wanted to film at 9 a.m., and we just wouldn't be able to have everything set up by then, and so he got us in there the night before and got us set up and everything else. So he was a great supporter of those fan kind of things. And so good luck to him at Toledo.
And I'll just say, you never go wrong with a former Big Ten college baseball player.
That's right. He played at Iowa, is that right?
Yes, he did.
Yes, baseball at Iowa, yes.
Where Illinois will be this weekend. But we plan to bring you another episode before that, if everything goes according to schedule, and we'll let you know when we know what's going on with that. But that'll wrap up for this. By the way, just know this.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lengthy discussion on distance running along with the other Illini matters that if you were doing a half marathon, you probably aren't. You probably have, and listening to this at the same time, you still have a ways to go yet.
Unless, what is the winner, like, what did the winner of the half run?
Oh, gosh.
Any idea, Ella?
Not a clue.
Okay. Like, what's the pace on a half?
You know, if you're running 6 or 7 minute miles,
yeah,
you're trucking. You know, and I'm not talking about the elite distance runners, even faster. So that's going to put you in the, what, an hour and a quarter?
All right, I figured it out. It was 1 hour and 5 minutes.
Wow.
So average 5 minute pace from Nick Dowd, 25 out of Bloomington, Illinois.
Wow. Hour and 5 minutes around 13 miles.
And 30 seconds.
Yeah.
He burned more calories than me walking 13.
I wasn't halfway done at that point. I'll tell you, mm-hmm, this, I got to the ballpark, mm-hmm, for the baseball game. The baseball game is at 3. I'm getting there around 12:30 or 1. Okay, at this point, I finished the marathon at about 10:15 a.m. But from the point I – maybe that was probably 5 minutes after 10, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people started somewhere around 7:45 a.m., okay? I'm at the baseball field. You can hear the echoing of the PA because you finish inside Memorial Stadium.
Sure.
You're still hearing them announce,
mm-hmm,
so-and-so is coming. Because they announce your name as you come across.
Yeah.
They don't everybody. But if they see, oh, congratulations to Ella coming across.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can hear that over in Illinois field. I'm now in, I've gone home. I've had post-race food. I've gone home. I've showered. I've gone to the ballpark. And people are still running, finishing the marathon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that's a lot of running.
Mm-hmm. Is there a point where they're like, yeah.
If you get hit by the street sweeper behind you, you know that it's done. That's just like, if you can't outrun that, it's over.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, thank you for listening to the marathon episode of Light the Eye.
That's right. This is how we should advertise it. It's going to be a marathon episode.
Looking through the eye.
Thank you to
love.
Ella Peterson, our producer and engineer here for us today. Thank you to our fine hosts inside the Armory at the University of Illinois, the Center for Innovation and Teaching and Learning, providing us this outstanding studio. Thanks to our sponsors, Logic Events and Logic Co-Working, and of course, the U of I Credit Union. For Robert Rosenthal, I'm Scott Beatty. We'll talk to you again next time when we let you remember how to do that.
I think. Okay. I think. Let's try
that button. Next time when we light the eye.